Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hi, Ryan.
I don't mean to alarm you, Jocelyn, but something just fell off my chair. If I suddenly fall to the depths, you know what happened. I have not been sucked into hell. I don't know what happened. It's off to a great start.
I know. Well, did you notice how I didn't screw up the intro this week? I feel pretty happy about that, personally.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was just like, you know what? Let's just let it flow. See if anyone notices that we, you know, got everything going right. No, that's great. Your words are doing much better than mine if anyone was in the pre-show.
Yeah. Yes, it was quite an experience, Ryan in pre-show. But what we did do in our pre-show is totally tease what we're going to be talking about this week, which is StarCraft II.
That's for the video, folk.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I don't even know what that was. A mouse pad? Some kind of artwork?
It's part of my collector's... It's my mouse pad. I'm not currently using it because I don't have enough room here.
I'm using mine. Well, my generic Blizzard one. See if I can get it out here without... there we go. Ruining all the things. Ha!
Yeah. See, this is my...
Which I didn't even know what 2 out of 3 of those were, 6 months ago. So that's very exciting for me.
I'm using the Nerdtacular swag bag one because my keyboard is too big for my... this standard office keyboard drawer. So that's, you know... Being a gamer, man.
I see. So, you are playing Heart of the Swarm. How are you doing with that?
Great. I love it. It's fantastic. I picked up the Collector's Edition. Just see here. I don't have the Wings of Liberty Collector's Edition. I wasn't as big into StarCraft when that came out, so I just kind of picked up a box copy out of interest, but... ended up loving the campaign, and I'm really glad you're getting through it. I'm about 2/3 of the way through Heart of the Swarm, and one of the biggest things I'm noticing is that the story is really conflicting in a good way. And I don't want to spoil anything. This is all spoiler-free, and I don't even want to hint, because the game is so much fun, and the stuff they allow you to do in the single-player... is very different from other RTS games where if you play an RTS single player, usually it's just an extension of the multiplayer in the sense that you build up a base, kill the guy on the other side, and then you get a cutscene. That's not the case with Heart of the Swarm in the sense that you're doing interesting things that Blizzard had to go above and beyond to build. You know, it's you're given units that you don't even get in the multiplayer game. You're given like evolutions to your units. Like you can make a Zergling, you can choose either it can jump up ledges or it can, I don't know what the other one, I chose the jumping one because it turned it into a Raptor Zergling, which I mean,
ooh, that's actually really, really cool.
Yeah, you know, the way the units change over the game is really neat. And Kerrigan is just such a neat character.
She really, really is. I've gotten to the point in Wings of Liberty now, because that's what I've been doing, is I've been playing the crap out of that campaign. Finally beat that GD Zerg level, the one where there's like it's infecting the colonies on Haven. It took me over an hour, and it's just so frustrating, and I hate Zerg so much, and I just wanted to get on with the story. So finally I beat that, and then spoilers, guys, your little doctor friend in the lab goes all zergy, and you have to shoot her in the face. And I was kind of like, good, because you were kind of pissing me off anyway with all your whining about your colonists. Like, I'm glad that I'm done with you.
I don't remember that.
The
crappy thing about playing StarCraft now is that that happened 2.5 years ago. Almost 3 years ago for me.
That's true.
And I don't remember... I remember the... motivation for Jim Raynor, and I remember the ending. That's it. And some would say the ending is probably the most important when continuing on into the next game. I mean, that you could pretty much apply that statement to any game. but more so in this one, because the second one picks up, I think, 3 weeks after the events of the first game. And So you're enjoying the story in the first one. Do you like playing as the Terran? Is that like your favorite go-to race?
No. No. Oh my God. I just started doing the Crystal missions, and so I've got to play three missions as Protoss, and I love it. Oh yeah. My God, they're so much fun. They're just, their units are cool. They do all the warpy stuff, and like, I mean, they throw you right in, and they're basically like, first time you get like stalkers and zealots and mm-hmm. like your main dude, and then the next mission you get stalkers and zealots, and then you get like everything, like Dark Templars and the big Colossus things, and like I actually guess I've done three or four of those missions actually, because I've got pretty far now. But basically, it's like every new mission that you do, they throw like six things at you, and mm-hmm. they're like, oh, by the way, you can do this, 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 and this. Go! And I'm just kind of like, oh, you're overwhelming me, but I love it.
That was one of my favorite things about Wings of Liberty, because when they announced it, they said, StarCraft 2 is happening. And then I think a year later, they said, great news, guys, StarCraft 2 is happening, but we're spreading it across three games and evidently across 6 or 7 years of development time. Mm. So we got the Terran campaign, which is great. I had a blast with it. Terran is up there in terms of my favorite StarCraft race, but I love campaign because it allows you to explore the features of every race. Like mm-hmm. in the original StarCraft, you were given the campaign for all three races to play, which was great. But in this one, I don't even think you get to control the Zerg in Wings of Liberty.
No.
But they did say like, oh, well.
Not so far anyway.
Yeah, I don't think you do. But they did say that because the Protoss campaign is so far away, we made sure to include like Protoss missions in Wings of Liberty. And that being said, there hasn't really been anything but Zerg in Heart of the Swarm.
Well, it kind of makes sense.
Well, it does. And that being said, like in that statement, you might think, oh, you just build a base as the Zerg and take out the base across the way. But they really mix it up in terms of the mission types. Like one mission, you're infesting Terran bases, and you're basically playing a Dota, but you're setting up where the creeps spawn. Mm. It's really cool what they've done with the campaign levels, and I remember them creating really cool set pieces, I'll say, for the first one as well. So are you very close to beating it? Because I gotta say, Heart of the Swarm, you gotta get on it, in on that. It's great.
Well, and that's kind of why I've been so focusing on Wings of Liberty. I mean, I think I tried that Haven campaign like probably 4 or 5 times, and I was just so frustrated with that one mission, and I couldn't get past it. So now that I've gotten past it, I mean, I've played so much in the last like 2 days. It's kind of insane. It's crazy. It's like I play one mission, and then I'm like, okay, well, that only took like 20 minutes, so I could totally do another one because mm-hmm. nothing's happening in the next 20 minutes, right? And I think I've gone through I don't even know. I think only two main campaign missions, mm-hmm. but I finished all the Doctor's missions because that Haven one was the last one. I finished all of Tosh's missions, which was the breakout at the prison, and he is my favorite character. I think he is so cool.
So like, you chose Tosh?
I did. Well, it was, you know, I didn't really understand when you were trying to explain it to me without spoilers, but like this random chick who I've never seen before in my life, who works for the Dominion dude, comes on the screen and says, ooh, this guy's all bad. You should not trust him. And I'm like, really? Really?
Well, see, that's the thing is that, and I mean, I'm not faulting you for it because it is really a niche character. And you're going to be like, Ryan, that's not a good enough reason for me to know this person. But Nova, which is a ghost in StarCraft,
yes, I did get that she was
blonde
a ghost.
Chick. She was actually going to star in her own Blizzard game called Ghost, and it was going to be a console game, but they pretty much canceled it. Like it was very close to release. Like they had playable builds at E3 and stuff, and then Blizzard canned it. And that's what was so special about Nova getting her own novel and showing up in StarCraft 2. It's like, oh my God, you know, StarCraft Ghost would have led right into StarCraft 2 if they hadn't canceled it. So that's probably where you're getting
that
disconnect.
So she's actually like this big important character that I'm supposed to know and trust, right?
She has
a history with Jim and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
It's not just like full on out of nowhere, like, I work for the Dominion. Well, do what I mean, I say. In which case I say, no.
I think it's half and half in the sense that you may have needed to read the novel to get it, but also it's just that sort of wink and nod to, like, oh, this character was supposed to be pretty big in the StarCraft universe because she was going to have her own game.
Right.
And I think technically that story exists within the canon, and I'm not certain, but it may have been ported into the novel they put out. But yeah, she's a big character, and she shows up in the second one as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a spoiler.
I just went and did the whole prison break, and that was fun, and that, you know, introduced you to the specters and the ghosts and everything they can do, and you learn nukes. So that would have been handy a couple months ago when my boyfriend nuked me, because that's a nice thing to do when someone's first starting out in StarCraft.
I think you maybe want to be careful with what you said. Not just putting it out there. I forget what I was going to say.
Totally threw you right off there. But yeah, so I finished all of Tosh's missions. I finished all of the Lab Tech's missions. I did a whole bunch of the Protoss missions. And oh my God, it's so much fun. And each one is different. Like you said, it's not just you're on one side, your enemy's on the other. Like sometimes there was a mission with Kerrigan where she was like, going through and trying to find the data centers, so you had to kind of get there before she did and destroy them so she didn't get the information about the artifacts. There was another one where there's this like crazy hybrid dude mm-hmm. who's like coming across the map and he keeps like regenerating or whatever and starting back at his home base and coming at you again, and you have to try to free the three Protoss guys who are like the archival people. And it just like, there are so many different ways to play through those missions, and I feel like I would play it over and over and over again. And I mean, achievements too, like, holy crap, some of those things when I finish the missions, I'm just like, how on earth would you ever do that? It's like, complete this mission on hard difficulty in 20 minutes or less, and I'm just like, that just took me 40 on normal. No.
Yeah, the achievements, I think the achievements in StarCraft and Diablo 3 for that matter are a little better than the ones in WoW, because WoW just sort of gives you like achievement vomit, like here's a billion achievements you can try and get.
There's like 2,000 achievements in WoW.
And with StarCraft it's like there's three per mission, and at least in Heart of the Swarm you're given three, one for completing and then two for little side objectives, and it's really hard to get them without actually knowing what to aim for. Sometimes you just, you know, best case scenario, just do everything that the game kind of hints at. If they say, like, oh, this thing is a hive mind, you should probably destroy it. Then you should find everyone on the map and destroy it, because there's an achievement, you know? So,
exactly. My last Protoss mission, I was so angry because there was, like, this old warp gate and this old something else. I can't remember what it was called, but it's the thing that warps in those big dudes that walk really slow with the big guns. I can't remember what they're called. I think they start with I.
There's so many of them.
Their hotkey, I think, is I. But anyways.
It probably doesn't start with I.
It probably doesn't. But their hotkey is I, which I should get bonus points for trying to remember hotkeys.
Yeah, hotkeys.
Hotkeys are tricky. But what you had to do is go and build a pylon next to these old abandoned ones to power them up, right? And there was, in the end, I didn't end up getting all the mission objectives because I was just like, my base is totally fine on its own. I have enough dudes back there that the Zerg aren't going to overrun me. So I need to go get to all the tentacles of the Overmind. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called? Yeah. So I had to get to all of those tentacle things and get its memories or whatever. So
tentacles.
I was like fighting my way to the very last one. And then they're like, oh, Zerg wave imminent in like 20 seconds or something. And I was like, oh, it'll be totally fine. And they destroyed my two pylons. And then I didn't complete all the mission objectives because I didn't activate these two stupid relic things. And I was like, God damn it.
Yeah, I found Zerg. I was doing like side objectives too in my missions. And occasionally you'd ignore like, a wave is incoming and you're halfway across the map trying to like do something for Billy Joe or something, and your base is being raped by Zerg, and I'm like, ah, son of a bitch. But
you're everywhere. Speaking of Zerg being everywhere,
right.
Clark also posted on the Doghouse website, his absolute trouncing of me with him playing Zerg and me playing Terran. And it's cut, like, it's short. It's probably about 5 minutes. And I swear to God, the match was like 45 minutes because he was just like sitting back and going really slow and doing all his stuff. But Clark plays like diamond. And I'm like level 80 bronze at best. All right. And he's just like, I literally at one point come out of my base and I'm running down the ramp and I'm like, creep, what the hell is that doing there?
Oh no. He towered you?
Everywhere. Oh, it was awful. No, this was like half an hour into the patch. Like, he was just literally everywhere. I couldn't even go down my ramp without hitting creep. And yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. I did see the video. I didn't get a chance to watch it yet. But that's the video you were talking about. I can't remember if we talked off air about it, but you were like freaking out.
Yeah.
That's pretty much every video if you play in video games. Because there was the Call of Duty one as well.
Yeah, that wasn't a video, though. That was just audio. Right. But this is actually, this is a recorded replay of our game, which is just...
That's good.
Yeah, bad news.
I saw a point in the chat room where someone said they weren't picking up Heart of the Swarm because it is a third of a game. And I don't know about you, Giles, and I'm not calling you out, you Sigidi. I actually think it's a valid point. With Wings of Liberty, do you feel like it's a full game? Like, you paid full price.
Definitely.
Well, you may not have paid full price for it, but...
I got it for Christmas.
Right. But, I mean, if you were to get it day one, does it feel like a full product?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, like, there's... God, I don't even know how many missions. There's like...
27?
Yeah, something in and around 30 missions. And if they take half an hour each, I mean, that's 15 hours of gameplay, not even counting the literally countless hours that I have already put into and will put into again into the multiplayer. Like, that game, it... One thing Blizzard does really, really well in every game, apparently, except for freaking WoW, is tell stories. But they do have really good lore. There's a lot of good stuff going on in the background. And I find... StarCraft is doing everything that I wish WoW would do. That even when I do the side missions, I'm still getting main story, I'm still learning about the characters. Even though I didn't play original StarCraft, I still know about Kerrigan and what happened. And, you know, like, I mean, I just hit the point, well, not just, a couple days ago, I hit the point where I actually got the cinematic of her when she's being left behind, right? Because you reactivate that AI robot thing that you find. Mm-hmm. And so you hear basically the big emperor guy saying, like, I would rather see the empire burn and fall to the Zerg than I would rather see it in anybody else's hands, you know, kind of thing. So it was just, it was really, really cool. And you see her with her, like, her goggles, and she sees all the Zerg coming and they're like surrounding her. And she just kind of has this moment where she just like takes off her goggles and like looks up to the sky, and I was just like, that right there, that is when she became the crazy, vengeful, like, Queen of the Blades character. Like, it had nothing to do with the Zerg infecting her. Like, it was all that, like, one moment, and it just, it's so well done. It makes me so happy that, the cinematics alone, I think, are a standalone experience, and that story so far is a standalone experience. Like, I didn't get it right at launch. So I don't feel like it's one third of a game because I haven't gotten there yet. I mean, I know that it's a bit of a cliffhanger ending type thing at the end of Wings of Liberty. It's not like anything is fully ended, you know, but at the same time, I mean, they're expansions, you know, I don't know.
He makes a valid point.
Heart of the Swarm is not $60, right? Like,
no,
Heart
of
the Swarm is $40. So again, it's even expansion pricing. So, yeah.
And like I said, we're not giving him shit. I just wanted to discuss it because I was playing through. You know, I'm, like I said, 2/3 through Heart of the Swarm, and it is a long game. And when you compare, if we're looking strictly at single player, ignoring multiplayer, because I don't really know. I know there are differences between Heart of the Swarm and Wings of Liberty in terms of multiplayer, but I don't think it's a huge difference. I could be... I'm probably wrong.
I think there's some new units and stuff, and it would totally change how you played the game in some cases, I think. Like, especially, I think Protoss got a really big... There's a lot of changes there, and I mean, like, siege tanks no longer require research.
I'm probably wrong. Let's just assume I'm wrong.
You're always wrong.
But, like, the single player alone is a huge campaign. And for $40, you're not getting you're not getting an expansion story, an expansion campaign. You're getting a full game. The only reason I'm talking about this is because Usagi Sinin, he says, is how to pronounce his name. You should get it, because it's totally worth it, especially if you enjoyed Wings of Liberty, because the continuation of the story, and like Jocelyn says, the characters and the way Blizzard portrays it. And you're right, World of Warcraft, you should play Warcraft 3 if you can stomach the 10-year-old graphics, but...
Oh, yeah, no, that actually, Warcraft 3 is one of the things that Joel and I really wanted to pick up to play with each other, because it just, you know, like, we really, really like Warcraft, like World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. And so I really think a lot of World of Warcraft, especially Burning Crusade stuff, seemed to stem from Warcraft 3. So that was one of the things that I was saying that I would like to do.
But yeah, if you're looking for great Warcraft story, play Warcraft 3 and Frozen Throne. Because I think with World of Warcraft, it's a little harder for them to portray story besides with... the small in-game cinematics. They've gotten better at it, but
they have. I've definitely noticed a change.
How do you feel about, like, having just played Wings of Liberty, how do you feel about the relationship between Jim Raynor and Kerrigan slash, well, not the Queen of Blades, but Kerrigan specifically?
So sad.
Yes, exactly.
Like, really, really tugs at your heartstrings, and then seeing him having to listen to that and just like, oh, and then he has the flashback, and oh man, and he just drinks himself into a stupor because he's so upset, and I'm just like, oh, hugs. It's okay.
I won't say any more, but I want you to beat it, and I would love you to pick up Heart of the Swarm and start playing that campaign, because I think, and again, I'm not even all the way through it, but I think that conversations shall be had, because you're gonna love the story as it continues. I was looking at your achievements the other day. You're probably, what, two-thirds of the way through Wings of Liberty at this point?
I believe so. I think I've done... It tells you...
Spoilers in the chat room.
So there's... I'm not reading the chat room.
Don't read it.
Oh, what was I going to say? There's a percentage. It tells you of achievements that you have in each of the expansions. So in Wings of Liberty and Heart of the Swarm. And then there's the number of missions that you've completed. And I'm not, like, it has to be missions that you've completed in the main storyline, because I'm really trying not to look. I can
don't
see
look,
because
it's not a spoiler for me. I'm going to say this, Ted. It's not a spoiler for me, because it's more a spoiler for the first game. It's not, don't worry about it, but anyway, Jocelyn, don't look at the chat.
So there's, I think I went from 13 missions complete to 15 missions complete, but I did like 10 missions. So it must just be main storyline. So I think I've completed 16 main storyline missions now, and I have 21% of the achievements. So generally I've been getting one for sure, if not two of the achievements. So I'm kind of thinking that, you know, even if I just average it out to getting one achievement per campaign mission run through, then I'm thinking if I have 20% of the achievements, times that by three, I'm about 60% of the way through the game. Jocelyn does math. So that's what I'm thinking, is I'm about 60% of the way through, I think.
You're getting there, and I think the closer you get to the end, you're going to want to power through it, because it gets really good.
Like, totally what's happening now. I can't put it down. It's amazing. I did, however, because I wrote a review for Doghouse for SimCity this past Tuesday, I have also been playing SimCity. Kind of not. I mean, it was still on Monday, because I had Friday off, and then we did the show, and we talked last week about how I was really, really trying but hadn't really been able to get in. I did the exact same thing on Monday, because I wanted to publish my review on Tuesday, and I had to bump the review to Wednesday because I couldn't get into the freaking game. It was ridiculous. Still made me so angry.
I'm going to use my new favorite catchphrase. Ashley says, I've been saying this a lot around the house, and that catchphrase is, ugh. And that sums up what she's been hearing coming out of the office as I'm trying to play SimCity, like... It's gotten better. Like, lately I've been able to connect.
It has gotten better. Once I've gotten in, I don't think I've actually been booted.
Yeah, I haven't lost... I've lost connection in-game, but I've never been booted.
That's true. So. That also happened to me, too. At which point, I kind of went, oh, dear God, no. what happens now? Because you get this red text at the top that says your connection to the SimCity servers has been lost. And I'm just like, oh, damn it.
Where's the quick save button?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, I got to sync to the cloud. Never mind. Yeah.
Which you can't do when the servers are down. Yeah. So I still don't really know what happened to that game. But
oh, so you lost it.
I don't know. I haven't gone back in again.
Okay, but we spent an entire episode talking about how we hated
server issues. What we are going to say is that EA has apologized. They're offering a free game. I can't remember if we talked about that last week or not. I think it happened after our episode.
Yeah. I feel like it was like the day. It was a Saturday. I read it.
Yeah. So if you purchase and activate your copy before Monday, March 18th, you should get an email with a free EA title. Now, they did a Ask Lucy AMA thing on Twitter, which is the absolute worst place to do an AMA ever. Anyways.
Yeah, isn't AMA like strictly Reddit?
Well, it's like it's Ask Me Anything, right? So it's a Reddit thing. But I mean, she did it on Twitter. She's the head of Maxis. And her responses to things were so canned. It was ridiculous. And so, anyways, one of the things that people were asking, including myself, over and over and over again is this any free EA title? Like, what does this even mean? Can you give us a list of games to pick from? And she basically just said, I can't remember the exact wording. I kind of wish I'd thrown it in the doc now, but her response was basically like, you will have multiple titles to choose from. So we're going to choose the titles. There's more than one.
The only EA title that I'm interested in that, you know, is Crysis 3 and maybe probably wanting to play through Dead Space 3 on PC. If I were to suggest any of those recent titles, I would suggest Dead Space 3. But yeah, I am not optimistic.
Anything, it's not going to be a recent title. Yeah. It's not going to be a good seller. If they offered, I don't even know if they would offer something from the Sims franchise. Ooh. Because, I mean,
they would not do that. They're not that stupid.
Well, they sell well, right?
No, so I know that,
they give you something that is actually selling well? They're going to give you something that isn't selling well, hoping that you'll be like, hey, this is my free game, so I'm going to go play it and then tell my friends about how awesome this game is that doesn't actually sell, in hopes that you actually bring in sales for them. Because otherwise, like, what's the point in giving away a free title that sells well? It doesn't make sense from a marketing standpoint. Well, they're not actually trying to make anything up to us.
It's a goodwill gesture. They are trying to ease the pain and give us a little tidbit.
You give them too much credit.
I have to. I mean, they could easily have not done anything. Like, this is at least, like, for the most evil company in the United States of America, this is at least something. They're throwing us a bone. I think, I have to play devil's advocate and say that I think what's going to happen is I don't think they're going to offer recent titles. As much as I would love to pick up Crysis 3 for $0, but I think what they'll give us is Mass Effect 3, Battlefield 3, or probably there's got to be another one within something that came out last year.
I
am
crossing my fingers for a Sims expansion because there's still a couple that I don't have. But I don't really think that I'm going to get anything out of this that I really, really want.
Ooh, Need for Speed would be a good one.
I'm not a big racing game person. I used to be, and I love me some Mario Kart, but Need for Speed, not really up my alley. Yeah. Car reference.
Well, man. Where's the end button on this podcast machine? You know what? If it was Sims 3, it just feels too close. Like, you're trying to throw, like, a Sims-branded Band-Aid over a Sims-branded problem. Like,
yeah, true.
But then again, I'm not EA, and I really hope they do good with this goodwill gesture. But that being said, is anything working for you in this game?
Some things are working, but I'm finding that even though I have functionality, things are working. Mm-hmm. It's not the SimCity that I know and love. And I know this, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is your first time in a SimCity game, right? You
first
didn't play.
Ever.
Yeah, first ever. So the SimCity franchise used to be, here is your blank canvas, do with what you will. It was huge. Like, it would take hours and hours and hours to fill the space. you could terraform things, so you could, you know, like raise or lower, you could create mountains or lakes or rivers or, yeah, it was insane the amount of customization that was available to you. It's like basically they gave you a big, huge green section of space and then said, you know, build and do whatever you want. So I really find that that's lacking in this SimCity. This SimCity is very, very small. And, you know, you don't really have the kind of control. I mean, you can do things in a way that will get you the same end result as what you would do just with placing a zone in original SimCity. Like, you know, you could say, I want my downtown to be high density commercial. And you could place high density commercial. Well, they got rid of all the density zoning. So now it's like you have to put a certain density of a road and then you have to zone commercial and then you have to increase that land value. And there's all of these things that, I mean, I guess it's more complicated. It's just, I don't know. I'm having trouble adjusting, and I think it's because I loved old SimCity so much. But I find the UI is kind of convoluted. It's just, the tutorial I didn't like, and again, like all of the stuff I did write, the first part of the review is on the Doghouse Network site, but I'm not liking it. I'm really disappointed.
That sucks. This is going to be another one of those instances where it's like, Jocelyn, that sucks because I'm enjoying it, and maybe
I'm really, really glad. I'm thinking I just need to put more time in and get used to new SimCity instead of creating it or comparing it constantly to old SimCity, but it almost feels like SimCity the MMO, you know? Like, it's SimCity used to be this single-player experience where you could do with whatever you want, and you could build it up and tear it down, and it was a lot of building and simulation and fun, and you could do it over and over and over again. But this, I'm so confused about how they're trying to make it work in this regional setting. I have yet to be online at the same time as someone sharing my region, which is really frustrating because I had a fire that burned down the doghouse because that's the name of my town, because it really makes me happy when you log in. It says, now entering the doghouse, which is, I thought, really, really funny because I'm like, I'm going to play this game so much that it's totally going to put me in the doghouse with Joel. Yeah. No, it's totally not happening that way at all.
Well,
I had a fire and I didn't have a fire station. It kept popping up saying, ask your neighbors for help. And I was like, how do I do that? They're not online. And I'm looking for things that will let me interact with them or, you know, go to their cities and you know, take their firemen who are standing there doing nothing.
Yeah.
Because I can go to their city and I can look at it.
Right.
But then I'm just like, oh, but if you could just come over here and put out the fire that's kind of killing my town right now, that'd be amazing.
They have to volunteer their firefighters. So, like, and it's funny you mentioned a SimCity MMO because it really is. You really have to depend on your friends or your own other cities because you can have multiple cities of your own.
I didn't know that I could claim multiple cities in a region.
And you kind of have to if you want to avoid your town crashing. I built a town where I sort of, you know, it just got really overcrowded really quickly. There was no space to do anything. Like, if I was trying to be a jack of all trades. So I was like, well, I want a university. So like, well, just throw it over top of all these market stuff. And it's, oh, I want, you know, the mayor's house. We'll just throw it over top of all the residential stuff. And eventually you're constantly getting messages saying, you need more residential. You need more residential because you've plowed all the way through it just to have these special buildings.
See, you never used to run out of space that quickly. Because how many hours do you think that you've probably put in?
I think Origin says I've put like 17 hours in. I played a lot. But
oh, really? So you actually did, you feel that you put 17 hours in. That's not you sitting refreshing trying to get in. Because
maybe,
you spent a lot of time doing that too.
Maybe like 12 hours.
Yeah. So, but, well, still, you know, that's significant considering you have a full-time job, right?
But
so.
My city would fill up in 2 hours. Like, I had to start, like, supporting, you know, I had to start micromanaging rather than setting things up. And the setting things up is fun. The waiting, because eventually you get to a point where you have to wait for money to come in and schedule events, and it just gets boring. So having two cities feels, I've actually just hit a wall with my current town I'm playing with, and I had to start another town to sort of support it. But mm-hmm. the great part about that is that if you have a town with, say, like a power plant and a high efficiency water plant, you can support your new town just by buying power and water from your old town, which sends money to my bankrupt town. And also,
it's just it seems so weird. It's like, it's as if WoW forced you to, in order to make your main character keep going, you had to make a bank alt or something. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like really weird and broken in a multiplayer mechanic. It's not a single player mechanic, but it's not a multiplayer mechanic. It's some weird, non-functioning hybrid of the two. It's just...
But I'm doing it wrong. I'm not doing it in the vision that Maxis has. I think the vision Maxis has is they want you to coordinate with your friends and say, okay, Jocelyn, right. we're going to start a Gamers Inn city. I'm gonna tech to try and get all the power we need. I'm going to build a giant power plant and just supply it to everybody. You guys just support yourselves with windmills for now. And Jocelyn, you be the education city.
Basically like... The region is now what an old SimCity map was.
I feel like that's
where I used to have an industrial section of my old huge SimCity map. Now Ryan will run the industrial city in the region, and I will run the education city in the region. And you know, like, and I can kind of see that, and I can see how that would be interesting and fun. And I guess if you could get everybody on at the same time, that would be good. But I don't know. I'm playing with people on the West Coast right now, so there's a 4-hour time difference between me and who I'm playing with. So I can see how that would cause a problem. It's not fun yet because I haven't had that kind of experience. And I can see how maybe playing with 15 other people at the same time and coordinating cities, that's a cool new experience. Mm-hmm. I just haven't had it yet.
Yeah, I'm playing with 3 other people, and we were all on vent at the same time, and we would like be saying like, oh, I just got an upgrade on my town hall, I'm plopping down a safety facility, so no one else get that, because when you upgrade, that allows you to build better service buildings or specialization buildings, and it applies to the whole region. So sure, if you had your own city and you wanted to have like a giant city hall, it would look cool, but you're taking up valuable space when you really don't need to, because eventually you'll be able to start a new town and not have to build any sort of specialization support. And there's a reason they call it specializations, is because you are literally supposed to focus on one or two things. And if you try to go overboard, your city crashes, you end up going in the red and then having to raise taxes or take bonds out or something. So, which isn't fun.
Yeah. I agree. So I don't know. Like I said, I think I need some more time with SimCity. It could be good if I can get some maybe East Coast people to play with me at the same time. But as of right now, it's just kind of a weird, broken experience. Mm. And especially with the mass exodus over the last week of people who've just totally given up, you know, like I just...
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I kind of hope it turns around, but I don't really see that happening anytime soon. So anyways, that was quite a long what we're playing section. So I think we're going to move on to our sponsor. The Kerrigan Rifle has found a home. So thanks everyone who entered the contest. Ryan and I really appreciate your continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. So use the code THEGAMERSIN to double your RAM, as always, when you purchase a new gaming rig. 4 becomes 8, 8 becomes 16, but 16 does not become 32, because that would be insane. So head on over to doghousesystems.com and get your order on. Which brings us to Quickfire News.
Excellent. Levine killed the Bioshock movie. Back in 2008, Ken Levine, the guy behind Bioshock. Back in 2008, Gore Verbinski, the director of Pirates of the Caribbean, announced that he was developing a hard R film based on Bioshock. However, when Watchmen, another hard R film, hard R sounds like a bad term.
Really bad.
Yeah. That's the last one, I believe. Came out and bombed. So the studio got cold feet. They slashed Verbinski's budget from $200 million to $80 million, which just didn't fly with the director, so he left the project. Levine continues the story saying, they brought another director in and I didn't really see the match there. And 2K is one of those companies that puts a lot of creative trust in people. So they said, if you want to kill it, kill it. And I killed it. Now that Levine has got a taste for blood, here's hoping he can kill the Resident Evil film franchise.
Nice.
Yeah.
What Ouya won't have come March 28th. A statement from the console manufacturer has stated that the system will launch without online chat, friends lists, or achievements. Online multiplayer will be available, though, as long as the developers have built in that functionality. Players can expect other online functionality to be supported by the console later this year. Kickstarter backers get their systems at the end of the month, followed by those who pre-order receiving theirs in April. The console will be available to traditional retailers in June.
Pokemon gets first stab at Wii U NFC tech. Built into the Wii U controller is NFC, which allows Skylanders or Disney Infinity toys to jump into their respective games. However, no Wii U game has actually used the controller functionality yet, but rest assured, Nintendo is here to help, at least in Japan. It looks like the Pokemon franchise will be the first to test the waters, which makes sense, as there are 650 of them. Jocelyn, that's a lot of Pokemon.
That is a lot of Pokemon.
Yeah. The game is called Pokemon Rumble U and will be download only, costing around $19 US, with toys being $2 US each. No word on a Western release, but we'll know more about the title closer to its release on April 24th.
Why do they have to put U at the end of every single game? We get it. It's called the Wii U.
That's Nintendo's MO. Like that. Except for the GameCube. Yeah. They didn't really do that with the GameCube.
No, it makes me so mad. Anyway, another Nintendo story. They've been found guilty of patent infringement. A federal jury has awarded $30.2 million in damages to a former Sony employee who holds a patent on 3D display technology that allows 3D images to be viewed without glasses. Sejiro Tomita, sorry about that, sued Nintendo back in 2011, but the case was only just finalized this past Wednesday. In a statement, Nintendo of America had this to say. The Tomita patent did not relate to the 3D games playable on the 3DS. Nintendo is confident that the result will be set aside. The jury's verdict will not impact Nintendo's continued sales in the U.S. of its highly acclaimed line of video game hardware, software, and accessories, including the Nintendo 3DS. Nintendo has a long history of developing innovative products while respecting the intellectual property of others. Apparently, the jury did not agree.
XI3's Piston, not at all Valve's Steambox. Valve had invested in XI3's prototype and asked the company to build a product specifically for Valve, which it turns out is not the Piston. This week, Valve distanced itself from the Piston, stating Valve's involvement ended last year and Piston is XI3's own project. One of the biggest clashes Piston has with Gabe's key beliefs of the Steambox project is Linux. At launch, Piston will ship with Windows and support multiple game platforms, including Steam. XI3 founder Jason Sullivan finished their response to Valve's remarks by stating, in closing, what Valve does or doesn't do with its Steambox will be up to them. So Gabe, it's up to you. The ball is in your court.
Disney Infinity has been delayed. But don't worry, guys. It's only for a month. I'm more excited about this game than I probably should be, but come on, it's an MMO by Disney featuring some of my favorite characters of all time, and there's little figurines. Do they know how to market or what? The game will be available on August 18th, which Disney says will allow them to add more bells and whistles and make sure the game really sings and pops. The game is set to release on Xbox 360, PC, PS3, Wii, Wii U, and the 3DS. No word on a Mac launch date, if any.
I didn't know it was an MMO. Neat.
Well, it's like everybody can come on and play and be one of their favorite characters. They have to buy the figurine first, like Skylanders, and then everybody just comes in, runs around, and plays all the different stories. And yeah, MMOE. MMO kind of ish.
It's definitely more appealing than Skylanders because that's just kids' toys. If it's Disney characters, it makes more sense. Saints Row 4 looks crazy. That's in all caps. Deep Silver and Volition unveiled their next masterpiece, calling it the climactic chapter of the saga that changed all the rules and blew the minds of a generation. Their words, not mine. The game will launch on August 20th, just under a month before GTA 5, for current-gen consoles and PC. However, this does not include Wii U, which could be good because Deep Silver sees it as a next-gen console, or bad because we still won't have any games for it. Anyways, the head of the Saints has been elected president of the United States, leading the charge against an alien force in a struggle to save humanity. Sounds and looks like a lot of fun.
Sony is naming PlayStation MVPs, the top 1% of the PlayStation community, meaning they are, quote-unquote, an avid PlayStation gamer with an impressive trophy collection and library of games, have received an email inviting them to apply for the PlayStation MVP program. There are no details as to what the program may entail, and being in the top 1% of the community only gets you an application. It doesn't guarantee membership. So, did you get an email?
No.
Neither did I, because I don't actually have a PlayStation, so there's that. Mm-hmm. But... Oh, what I am super excited about this week that did not make it into quick news, because we're going to talk about it as our topic, which is actually going to be pretty short this week because we ran so long on what we're playing, is a new Civ 5 expansion. So much excitement.
Surprise. Did this not catch you off guard?
A little bit. It feels to me like the old expansion, Gods and Kings, came out like 2 months ago, which is not the case. It came out last June, so when it's going to be a full year in between expansions, which is, you know, pretty standard for them. Mm. And I don't know about you, but I haven't even made it through all of the Gods and Kings content yet.
Oh, well, you can pretty much safely assume that I mean, we went over this.
I haven't gone through it, then you definitely haven't gone through it.
Well, Gandhi just screwed me over, and then I rage quit.
That's true. You really need to stop rage quitting Civ, because it's so good.
Well, tell Gandhi to stop being an asshole.
Maybe we should just play together, and then I can just take out Gandhi for you, like, right at the very beginning, and then
maybe I'll be Gandhi, and then I'll be all-powerful.
Mind blown. Mm. Wait, Gandhi's all-powerful?
Yeah, he's got Jedi mind powers.
Yeah, so anyways, I am super excited about this new expansion. They're bringing all kinds of stuff, including new scenarios, which that's one part of the game that I haven't actually played a lot of, is the scenarios. So have you done any of the scenario playing at all in Civ 5?
None. I remember Gods and Kings had that steampunk one that sounded interesting, but I've never loaded up a scenario. I usually just play, like, I pick a civilization and start a game.
I'm sorry, I have to point out the comment in the chat room, because amazing. Pacifist slap.
Well, you should write that down, and that'll be our show title.
Love it.
We'll put a big picture of Gandhi from Civ 5.
We've had so many Gandhi-related shows lately. We've got to stop talking about Civ 5. But yeah, so Brave New World is going to be coming out. It's going to be a $30 expansion, which seems cheap to me, Ryan. Like, what do you think? Does that seem kind of on the cheap side to you? I can't remember what Gods and Kings was, but I feel like it was like $40, maybe more.
I think Gods and Kings was right along that line, and I think that's a good price.
It's a great price. Yeah. Like, I'm obviously totally psyched for this, because I thought it was going to be like $40 or $50, and then they're like $29.99, and I was like, sold. Maybe I'll even buy two.
Yeah. Well,
just because I can.
It is. I'm really glad that they are doing expansion pricing, because again, that brings up the whole StarCraft thing, where Blizzard kind of, in order to keep their customers happy, they had to do expansion pricing, and Firaxis is doing an amazing job with this expansion pricing, because they are adding a ton of content, it feels like. Just reading over this article, it's just crazy.
I'm so excited, because one thing that I definitely have noticed with... I tend to not go for Warlord Conquest victories. I tend to kind of sit back and tech up and go for kind of more cultural...
Sure.
...related things. And that's one of the things that they definitely point out here, is that a cultural victory... kind of hard to come by, because it is like you have to focus on it right from the very beginning in order to get enough buildings soon enough to build up enough culture for a cultural victory.
Right.
But at the same time, you get to a certain point and it becomes very passive. Like, you're just like, okay, I have enough buildings now that I can get a cultural victory by the end of the game. So you just kind of then sit back, try not to lose any of your cities, build up a little bit of an army, but you're very defensive and passive, and you're just kind of waiting for the turns to go by. So that's something that they're totally changing, which I love. And they're making culture more offensive, which is so cool. So it's like you have different routes and stuff that you can establish with your neighbors. And then the more you trade with them, the more your culture will kind of go into their civilization. You can go on cultural missions, basically, to spread yourself through the world and gain more culture instead of simply sitting back and, you know, it counting up like wealth. So I am super excited. It's going to be really, really awesome.
So when you say it's more offensive, is that like you can develop a really bad play, take it on the road to your Gandhi civilization, and then it's so bad that the town riots and it's burned to the ground?
No, it's not like that.
Man.
It's more like, you know, the great people that you generate?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you might generate Shakespeare and he might write a play, but you don't actually benefit from that culture unless you have a theater where he can exhibit that play. And then he has to go there, and then you do the whole consume a great person to then add that play to the theater and make the theater do like double the work or like generate double the culture or something, you know? So there's all these things that you can do to kind of as enhancements to buildings. But it's cool because sometimes when you were focusing on culture, you would get these great people and you can't really use them in the early game, right? So, you could use them in the early game. Well, now they're saying you can't. You have to wait until your technology catches up with the fact that you've got Shakespeare. You know, it didn't make a whole lot of sense because, I mean, sometimes I'd have civilizations that were, it was still like 2000 BC and I was getting characters like Shakespeare. And I'm just like, well, that doesn't really fit. I don't even have a theater yet. Or, you know, in some cases, I don't have writing, you know. And it's just like, well, why do I now have Shakespeare? Like, there was a real disconnect in the way that culture worked. So I'm really excited about this. And just the whole idea of tourism, because it kind of, generally with a expansion to Civ, they tend to introduce something new. Like last year with Gods and Kings, it was religion. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they're building up their end game and really giving you something to do as a cultural civilization, winning, I think.
Yeah, because like you said, like the article states, and like you were saying, it was if you wanted a cultural win, you just played the waiting game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then
you just had to not die, basically.
Yeah,
it kind of was. Oh. And I'm not a huge warlordy type person. I feel really bad when I build up a big army because I know how to build up a big army, but it makes you feel bad, like a bad person.
Well, everyone
build up a big army and then like kill everyone.
Yeah,
and it makes me really, really angry when I don't build up a big army and I'm just trying to be diplomatic and nice to everybody, and all of a sudden someone's like, "I'm tired of your crap, and I'm gonna go to war," and I'm just like,
you're bringing back flashbacks. I don't know if I want to go back to this game.
Anything to anybody.
Yeah.
I'm all white flags and doves, and you're going to come destroy me? God, jerk.
Is there a French hero?
No.
Oh, 60-year-old joke. 70-year-old joke. Ryan does math.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, tourism. Like, that's great.
Dove isn't French. Oh.
White flags.
White flag is.
We're going to get an email from Greg or Val. Well, not Val, but probably Greg. Val's a different kind of French, just in case you're wondering, guys. So, yeah, tourism, that sounds really cool. I actually want to try that. But I'm more interested in telling North Korea off with this World Congress sort of diplomatic thing. It sounds like a sort of an expansion on the UN, because they had the UN, right?
Because, yeah, they had the UN, but it took you a really, really long time. It was very endgame. But
sure.
Usually, I found in the games that I played, I had the UN for maybe 25 to 50 turns. Like, it's very much right at the end. And the whole World Congress idea seems to be the same thing as the UN, where everybody gets together and you vote on things that will enhance the world, or sanctions against that guy that's being a jerk, Gandhi. You know, you can do all that kind of stuff, but from way earlier in the game. Because I always found that it was really, really interesting to do things like, you know, recycling programs everywhere, or, you know, these big sweeping things that every nation had to do because it was a UN-mandated thing, right?
Right.
So it's really, really cool and really, really interesting, but always right at the end of the game. And only, you know, you can only do two or three things because, you know, each each resolution takes, you know, five turns to, I can't remember if it was five turns for everybody to think over and then vote or five turns to implement, but however they did it, is there was a certain number of turns before you could do another resolution. So it was really interesting, but I found way too short.
Okay. So this is a huge expansion then on the UN, because if you're saying the UN only lasted 50 turns, then this World Congress...
Well, I mean, it's different for everybody, right? Yeah. Because it's the UN is the end of a tech tree. So if you get all the way to the end of that tech tree way, way early, then... Mm. Although, I mean, I think to have the UN, you pretty much have to have every technology in the game. So it's very much endgame. It's like one right before future tech.
I really want to just relive the horrors that we're living now, where I can just tell North Korea to stop building nukes. I think that's the idea, the general idea behind it, right? So, I don't know. It sounds cool. And again, it just sounds like a more involved way to win diplomatically.
Mm-hmm.
That brings up the next point. Do you think that they're going to do another expansion after this? Or do you, being of a Civ player, have they kind of addressed everything?
Well, see, that's the great thing about Civ, is you always think that they've addressed everything, and then they come at you with, like, you're like, oh, now they've put religion in, so, you know, that pretty much rounds out everything that they had in the last game, and then they're like, boom, tourism, take that. And I'm like,
that's a good point.
Whoa! And so I think that probably Civ 5 still has one more expansion in it. Generally, they have 2 to 3. I'm just trying to think. There was Beyond Sword and... Oh, I can't even remember, but I feel like there were 3 expansions for Civ 4. I might be wrong. There was definitely 2. I feel like there were 3. So, you know, usually they have 2 or 3 expansions in them before they up it to the next Civ. But, I mean, I'm kind of feeling this with a lot of games now that I loved growing up, is that they've kind of hit a wall. Like, I don't know where they're going to go. There was a huge jump from 3 to 4 and then 4 to 5. And it was the same with the Sims franchise. There was a huge jump from Sims 1 to 2 and then 2 to 3. And now you're just kind of like, I don't know what that next step is. I can't see where they'd go with that.
Graphically, generally,
you know, like it was very 2D stuff. And then they, you know, were able to do 3D and then you could zoom right down in and really experience the Sims. And it's the same sort of thing with Civ. I mean, they've updated graphics, they've updated gameplay, and, you know, they went from, like, they moved to the hexagon shape tiles, and, you know, they made all these big, huge changes, and I just don't really see where they're going to go from here. It would be really cool if instead of doing a Civ 6, they just kind of kept expanding on 5 and adding more functionality and more civilizations and, you know, kind of expanding to more of the world. And that's another thing, that they're adding 9 new playable civilizations and 8 new wonders. Like, it's literally the history of human civilization in a video game. There's so much to pull from. So I think if they just kept adding to 5, that would be really cool. I mean, as much as I want to see Civ 6, I don't really know what that would be, how that would be any different, you know? Yeah.
I mean, they probably know, but you mentioned the new, well, obviously they know, but I would think it'd be like a graphical upgrade to begin with, and because, I mean, computers will have come a long way once the 3rd or 4th expansion comes out, and I'm sure they can do stuff with processing and physics and stuff, but I'm curious, you playing a lot of Civ titles and them announcing that they're adding 9 new playable civilizations on top of all the expansion and original and DLC stuff they had. Has there ever been a Canadian civilization? Should that exist? It feels like they're missing one of the biggest countries.
Have been. Well, we are very large landmass-wise.
No, I just think in terms of the worldwide scenery,
stage,
I mean, we're there.
And we've changed quite a lot, I think, in the last, you know, 15 to 20 years. Mm-hmm. So... there's been city-states like Vancouver, Toronto, Ottawa. Those all show up as city-states. But there isn't... And, I mean, they've had... obviously, there's the Americans, there's the British. I think if you keep settling the British and the French, if you make enough cities, because you can name your cities whatever you want, but if you just keep settling and taking the defaults, eventually you'll hit Quebec City and Montreal and, you know, all of these places.
Okay.
So or you used to, I think, with city states, and with them giving Canadian names to city states, that's changed a little bit, but they used to be built into the civilizations that founded Canada, which I always thought was cool.
That there's makes also, sense, but I don't know. It's not.
It's not the same. No, I agree. It's not the same.
I would like but to see.
Wouldn't you kind of feel weird? I mean, I feel weird having the Americans in the game so early, like 2000 BC. There's the Americans, and I'm kind of like, that's weird. You know, yeah. I don't feel like they fit. I kind of wish they weren't there.
You kind
of no
have
offense
to
Americans. Oh dear God!
But that's the thing, though. That's the perfect sort of springboard. If the Americans are in there, the Canadians, are close enough. Like separates them is 100 years, which is like nothing when you think about like civilization on a whole.
Yeah.
So if we're gonna help Fraxis out here, who do you think is our hero character? Like, would it be Sir John A. Macdonald? Or
definitely. Okay. And everyone listening to this right now is like, who is that? What?
I apologize to all our American listeners but this is a little bit of a history lesson. If we know who George Washington is, you should know who Sir John A. Macdonald is. Now, I mean, not before we talked about this, but yeah, is that sort of the general rule of civilization, is that you go to like the founding father?
Pretty much.
Because the queen
or whoever they're kind of great leaders in the history of the civilization. So, I mean, it's Washington and Lincoln, I think, for the Americans. It's Queen Elizabeth for
UK.
The UK, and then there's Napoleon, there's Caesar. They're generally, I think Joan of Arc might be in there somewhere. Catherine is Russia. So they're kind of not necessarily a founding one, but basically like the biggest, most compelling political figure, whether that's queen, king, prime minister, president, whatever, that has to do with a given civilization.
Okay.
So it's really cool because they're representatives from, it's like basically having all of the coolest political heads of countries in one world at the same time. Super cool.
So I really want, they haven't announced what the new civilizations
are. No, I don't think they have.
So, I mean, 1 in 9 chance, I think, what do they got left? I mean, they did a lot, right?
Nice. Yeah, there are quite a lot.
Oh, I didn't mean it like that. I'm kind of down-speaking ourselves. Like, come on, they did Ireland, Australia, Britain. It's Canada, man. 1 in 9 chance. I mean, what else do they got to do, right?
Yeah, really.
I just really like, and I know Fraxis had Canadian soldiers in XCOM, so I mean, they've dabbled in the Canadianness. Yeah. But I don't know. It'd be a really cool opportunity to sort of explore that. That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be. So I think that pretty much, is that everything you wanted to cover with this new announcement, or are we good to go?
I assume we're both buying it. I think that's fine.
Yes,
where we
end. I definitely will be buying it day one. I don't anticipate any server issues. I'm sure everything will be fine because...
It's an offline game.
Well, it is an offline game. Imagine that.
It can be done, EA. It can be done.
So that brings us pretty much to the end of the show. If you want to send us feedback, you can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com or email us at info@gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on amove.tv along with other fabulous podcasts, including StarCast, Biggest Fan, and This Week in Blizz. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. And don't forget to leave us an iTunes review, as it's the best way for our show to reach new listeners. So before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to my brother Greg for creating our awesome music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We'd also like to thank Joel Duggan of StarCrossed Online, who drew our Twitter avatars and created our logo. You can find him on Twitter at Joel Duggan or read his comic at StarCrossedOnline.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week.
You can tell tonight is going to be a wonderful message. My word.
It's really, really fun because Ryan can't see what I'm doing at all, so.
Hi, this is Ryan, and I'm talking with my words, and I'm talking towards the mic, and my chair just squeaked.
As it often does.
Paul has suggested I WD-40 it. Prior to going live, I made a joke that I was very familiar with lubricants. Ready whenever everybody else is. Everybody move to A-move, move to A-move, move to the A-move.
Attack move, people!
Which I've been doing a lot of.
Oh, me too!
Oh, that so next. Good!
On the Gamers Inn.
I'm gonna pull this over so I don't... Just do it now, because I know I'll want to pull it out. Yeah. God.